A very good day to you all, and welcome back to Marca's Eye on La Liga, your number one home of all things Spanish football on a Tuesday afternoon, as once again we dive into the murky depths of this top flight from Spain and talk about all of the breaking news, the recent fixtures, and of course, footballing news across the continent as well. And we are touching on the continental football. Of course, the Champions League group stages were drawn since we last spoke on this show. We'll be diving into that and all of the La Liga news from the weekend with two of the finest footballing minds that Marca has to offer. And today, back for what will be a second consecutive week, is of course the number one, Mr. Simon Harrison at Simon H Football, joining us on the show. Simon, how you doing, mate?
Yeah, not too bad. Another good weekend of La Liga, and then also, well, you've already touched on it, but I think there's some interesting groups as well for the Champions League too.
Putting some consecutive appearances together, Si, and feeling any pressure at all? You feeling like you're in the manager's good books at the moment here on the podcast, I take it?
Yeah, but obviously you've always got people like you and snapping at your heels and waiting for you to mess up and say something you shouldn't do, so I'll just keep my feet on the ground for now.
He's not going to get ahead of himself too much. That's right, the other guest on the show today, Mr. Ewan McTaird, joining us on the line. Ewan, how you doing, mate? Long time no speak.
Yeah, doing good, and obviously we're already at an international break. I feel like we only just got started, but that's what happens every season. First couple of weeks, interesting stuff happening in La Liga, and already we've got to put it on hold and find out what else there is to do apart from twiddling our thumbs next weekend.
It does seem a little bit too quickly coming, this international break. And to be honest, I think as somebody that works in and around the game, it's something that I kind of really regret, having these big breaks in the very start of the season, because just as you start to think you're getting a grip on things with two matches in, okay, what are the consecutive trends over the first couple of weekends? It can all suddenly go askew and go all over the place with an international break coming in. Teams can change their dynamics slightly, go back, reassess. And of course, you've got the end of the transfer window as well coming up in the next few days, which I'm sure is going to bring plenty more discussion topics for us to get into, not only today, but next week as well. We will start with the Champions League draw, I think. And Simon, you touched on it. You and I know you were keeping a close eye on it as well, as we were intending to bring you that I think the idea at one point was to try and do a live broadcast, but due to technical glitches, i.e., none of us really know exactly how to get that off and underway, and it was all kind of thought up last minute. We decided instead to break it down today on the show. Really interesting draw in particular for Atletico Madrid, gentlemen. I think that's one of the top groups that we've had, not only in the last couple of years, but I can really remember in terms of, if you take Carabag out, and I don't want to take them out, they've obviously earned their place to be there, but we could have had perhaps a tastier team in that group. But Atletico Madrid, Chelsea and Roma are a big three that everyone will be wary of the other in that group at the moment.
Yeah, with Chelsea there, we've got a bit of a sort of Diego Costa transfer saga grudge match, and he's probably sitting there thinking, it's a fascinating draw for him, but he's not going to be able to play for either of them because Chelsea don't want him, and even if he does sign for Atletico Madrid, he can't play for them until January. So it's a match that's going to have lots of Diego Costa undertones, but no Diego Costa. And obviously that's the one that Atletico Madrid won to get to their Champions League final in 2014. And yeah, Chelsea, Atletico are probably the two favourites for that group, but we definitely can't rule out Roma. They've done quite well in the Champions League over the last few years, making the last 16 a couple of times. So that's going to be a tricky match as well. And having a team like Carabag at the bottom of the group, you imagine they're probably going to lose probably all six of their games. So that makes the ones between the top three even more important, because you can't really count on one of your opponents dropping a point against Carabag, because I really can't see that happening.
I don't know how well-versed you are on Carabag as a footballing side, but is there any chance of them being able to pull off a Bartek Borisov-type victory as Bartek did a few years ago against Bayern Munich, for instance, Simon? There's no screw going to be thrown into the works by this side, is it?
Well, it's a tough one. I mean, obviously, it's historic for them to be involved in the Champions League group stage. And I don't know. I mean, Baku's a long way for people to travel. So on that side of things, maybe that could be something that's a bit of an annoyance for teams having to go all the way out to Azerbaijan. I mean, just looking back at their sort of record in the qualification stages, it tends to be that at their own place, they keep a lot of clean sheets and they look quite tough to beat. Obviously, they'll be playing against, you know, lesser teams than the ones that they've been drawn with in their group. But you'd think that away from home, they'd really struggle. But you never know. There could be the chance of maybe an upset for a team having to travel a long way midweek all the way out to, you know, that far out to the east.
The other tasty draw from the Champions League was Group H, of course, which sees Borussia Dortmund, Real Madrid, Apoel and Tottenham Hotspur all together. And a chance for Real Madrid to go to Wembley, of course, and play at Wembley against Tottenham. A chance to take on Borussia Dortmund, who beat them in a Champions League semi-final, went on their way to the final, which they lost against Bayern Munich. And, of course, a chance for a nice little midweek break to Cyprus as well. You know, a nice short little trip for some summer, late summer sun.
Yeah, it's quite an exciting draw from a Real Madrid point of view, I think. But at the same time, playing Borussia Dortmund once again, maybe that gets a little bit boring. I think in the last five seasons, they've been paired against them four times. That's eight games altogether. And just last season as well, they were obviously in the same group, and Real Madrid actually lost that group with Dortmund going through as group winners. So that could maybe get a little bit boring playing Dortmund once again. And Real Madrid have actually struggled a little bit against Dortmund when they played them. Over those eight meetings, they've only won two of those games. They've obviously progressed to that. They've obviously got the better of Dortmund in a couple of ties, but yeah, Dortmund have caused Real Madrid some problems, and it's maybe a little bit boring as well. So that's probably not the most exciting draw Real Madrid could have hoped for. And Dortmund's certainly one of the stronger teams in that pot too. But a trip to Wembley is going to be something really nice. And yeah, like you say, off to Cyprus for the travelling fans, that's going to be a nice little trip, and one that they should expect to win quite comfortably.
What is an exciting draw for Real Madrid then? I mean, Dortmund obviously aren't the same side that they were when they went to Wembley in the Champions League final, and they're arguably not the same side they were maybe 3 years ago or so. But they're still a very good side. What would have been an interesting draw for Real Madrid, do you think, Ewan?
I think just something a little bit, just some new teams. We see it so often in the last couple of years that some of the groups just look almost identical year to year. I mean, the number of times Barcelona played Paris Saint-Germain, for example, Real Madrid and Borussia Dortmund, there just seem to be some teams that always tend to draw each other. Atletico Madrid and Bayern Munich as well is maybe another one. And I think we see a lot of the same games, you know, time and again every season. And you expect that in the knockout stages because you're going to have the biggest teams against each other in the latter stages. But to have some groups where the two top teams in each group are the same two that were in the same group last year maybe gets a little bit repetitive. And, you know, there's enough criticism of does the group stage have enough excitement anyway? So maybe it's something they could think about for future seasons is, you know, you've got all your pots and you can't have the same... you can't be drawing against a club from your own country, but perhaps you could also introduce a rule where you can't draw a club who you played in the group stages last year, because certainly last year there were some groups which looked very, very identical.
Oh, Ewan, we're getting to that point now where suddenly you'll have one team getting drawn out halfway through the draw and there will be only one pot that maybe they can go in. Surely that will start to get a little too convoluted by that point. I understand what you're saying, though. We do see some of these fixtures time and time again. Barcelona have Juventus, Olympiacos, Sporting Lisbon. You'd expect the latter two there to not really test them too much. Juventus, always a tricky side for anybody to face in European continental competition, particularly with both the defensive quality and the attacking side that they have now. Another side, arguably the standout team from Italian football. And for Barca, though, surely that's just a case now, that group D, of it being they'll finish first or second. Sporting and Olympiacos, as I say, won't be too difficult to handle.
You'd think, I'd definitely say they need to be thinking that they'll probably be going through in second. I mean, with how complete Juventus were last season, obviously a few things have changed in terms of personnel, but on the whole, they should be confident that almost all over the pitch, you know, that they've got an advantage over Barcelona. So I think Valverde will probably be aware of the fact that, you know, maybe that needs to be where the expectations are sort of set. He'll obviously know bits and bobs about Olympiacos in terms of it being when you play away, it'll be a tough atmosphere to play in. Sporting too, I mean, they always tend to be a team where some really interesting players end up moving to other bigger clubs from. So it's definitely a group where you look at it and you think, okay, that it's very clear who the top two are. They're expecting to go through. But it could potentially be decided, you know, the difference between those two sides, with maybe, you know, a tough away game going to play Olympiacos in quite a fierce atmosphere. Maybe that it might rub one team up the wrong way and another team might find that, you know, something that they're a bit more used to. So yeah, I mean, Barcelona would be a massive disappointment if they don't qualify from that group. As you've said, you really can't see anything other than them and Juventus finishing in the top two.
And Sevilla as well, with a pretty tidy draw. Only really Liverpool to worry them in their Champions League group as they sit alongside Maribor, Spartak, Moscow as well. And for a side that really impressed last year in the Champions League, it's an opportunity again for Sevilla to kick on and try and impress us all again on the European stage.
I think looking at it, I mean, there's no excuse why Sevilla can't be thinking that they could finish top of that group, that their home form last season was excellent. Obviously, progressing from the group stage last year, as they did too, that they know what's asked of them. Obviously, there's been change in terms of coaching, in terms of some players, but there still are some players involved who know what it's like to succeed in European competition back from the Emery days. So I think looking at that, obviously Liverpool, they've got a lot of quality going forward, but I'm sure that Eduardo Brits will be looking at that and thinking, you know, Liverpool, they're definitely vulnerable as a unit. That they've been criticised, even chastised for quite a bit this season in terms of how they defend, their goalkeeping situation. And then you look at Maribor and think, I mean, at the Roman Sanchez Pichuan, that should be a fairly easy game. I think Spartak are kind of the unknown quantity, having sort of come out of nowhere winning the league in Russia. That they could be a bit of, you know, a dark horse to cause Liverpool and Sevilla some problems. But I'll definitely say with that draw, I think it might really be the easiest draw that any of the Spanish teams have been given. So I'm sure that they'll be extremely happy with how it's turned out for them.
Ewan, you wanted to weigh in your two cents on the Sevilla Group E, if you will.
Yeah, I think it's just a very interesting group to see. It's always nice when Liverpool come to Spain, you know, there's huge respect and admiration for Liverpool in Spain. A lot of Spanish football fans will list Liverpool as their favourite team, so that's always going to be a nice game and a wee bit of a rematch there of the Europa League final from a couple of years ago. So, and that was a thrilling game. So if we can get two games just as exciting as that, and the way both of these teams play suggests that it could be quite a lot of goals, then that's definitely a fixture to look forward to as they sort of battle it out to probably take top spot in that group, which could be very important as Sevilla found out last year, finishing second and drawing the mighty Leicester.
And the Champions League group stage then. There are plenty of groups that will perhaps not provide as much entertainment as others, but the Spanish sides all involved in very intriguing ties, particularly with some English opposition thrown in as well. And as you say, I think the undertones of the Atletico Madrid-Chelsea game in particular are really looking interesting. Let's move that then into a bit of transfer window talk, because the window is about to close as we come to an end in August. And gentlemen, there's a late flurry of business taking place, but still at the top of the headlines, you mentioned it already, this potential move back to Atletico Madrid for Diego Costa. It seems it's looming and looking more and more likely that this is actually going to end up going through. And if you were to say perhaps 12 months ago, Diego Costa is going to be leaving Chelsea in a storm of fiery words and frustration and be heading back to Atletico Madrid, I doubt many people would have really believed that that might be the case, although considering the hot-headed temperament that the centre-forward has, you might not be as surprised as others. But it looks like this is going to happen now, and for a pretty decent price for a player of Diego Costa's quality, around about £41 million, €44 million, which says more about the exchange rate than it does anything else. So the value of Diego Costa that could be got out of this for Atleti, superb bit of business for them, even if they don't get him for another 6 months.
Yeah, I mean, Costa basically won them that league title in 2013-14, not just with his goals, but with the way he bullied opposition defences, and of course with Diego Simeone and the rest of the team they had that defence with Godin, Felipe Luis. It was a team effort, but you've seen how difficult Atletico Madrid have found it since Costa moved on. I mean, a lot of the players that made up that team are still at the club, and the likes of Felipe Luis have already come back and have flourished there, but they've been eternally looking for a Diego Costa replacement. Antoine Griezmann has come in and done fantastic, but he's not the centre forward, and Kevin Gamero, Fernando Torres have both had moments where they've looked like they could take on that baton and become the consistent centre forward that Atletico need, but they've both of them have suffered injuries, both of them have suffered periods of poor form, and you can just imagine how excited Simeone must be to have Costa potentially coming back and slotting back into that team, and arguably now with Costa and with Griezmann, even if they maybe only have 6 months together, that could be the best Atletico Madrid squad that they've ever had. So from Atletico Madrid point of view, it seems a very exciting opportunity from Chelsea. It could also be seen as a big positive. They've already got the replacement in Morata. They don't want him hanging around in the dressing room if Conte doesn't count on him. So it seems like the kind of deal where everybody seems to win, which is maybe why it's surprising that it's taken so long.
Do you ever really want to go back, though, and retrace your steps like that? I mean, the last centre-forward that we've seen do that at Atletico Madrid, for instance, of course, Fernando Torres coming back to a hero's welcome, of course, after his departure away. But obviously not the same player he was when he was at Atleti as a young teenager, developing his style and becoming that world name in world football. It's difficult, considering the pressure on Costa, for him to go back and replicate it, particularly in a different side, a different setup, and a side that's still probably going to be geared around Antoine Griezmann a hell of a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's always tough to go back in terms of, you know, people have their rose-tinted glasses on, remembering, you know, that title-winning side and everything. But I think just in practical terms, they're really lacking, you know, a bit of presence up front. I think it's something that they need. They've got the likes of Gamero and Correa, these kind of players, you know, they'd be better off playing more of a supporting role or maybe looking to get in behind, but they have really lacked that presence. I don't think that Fernando Torres has really offered it. Obviously, with him being a little bit older, a little bit wiser, you might think that he'd be the man to look to be that presence up top and bring others into play. But for me, I it's obviously just been a case of, you know, this whole TAS ban has kind of forced Atleti's hand into, you know, giving him a renewal on that deal. If they didn't have the transfer ban, would they have kept him? I'm not so sure on that, really. But yeah, I mean, he's exactly what they need. So I think in terms of bringing him back, it's not for nostalgia necessarily. It's more just for necessity. And the fact that Costa, he'll probably want to, you know, go back to Atleti, prove Antonio Conte wrong. I think it could all definitely work out in Simeone's favour.
You both seem to be quite favourable then towards this. So do you think both parties in terms of Costa and Atleti are getting what they want, and this is the right move for both teams to be making at this point then?
I think Costa probably feels a little bit, well, he'll feel a bit unwanted, and obviously the fact that Conte, after everything that he did last season, it's kind of a sour way to end things, especially given how he explained how most of it was done over text message. So I think it's important that he's going back to somewhere where he knows that the club loves him, that the fans love him, that Simeone, they had a good relationship. So I think in terms of that, it's a good environment for him to go back to. Obviously, it's comfortable, and that's where I think the only sort of question mark lies, which is it the right environment to, you know, really test him and spur him on? But I'm sure that Simeone will definitely be able to, you know, get the best out of Costa. I think they're quite like-minded in how they would ideally want the game to be played. And I think that Simeone, it won't be too hard for him to, you know, fire up Diego Costa. I think most people could do it just by, you know, a couple of little fouls, something like that. That would be enough to fire him up. So I'm sure that Simeone is someone who, you know, prides himself on being able to motivate teams and squeeze the best out of maybe a squad that isn't necessarily on a par with some of, like, the really great quality teams, such as, you know, your Real Madrid or Barcelona back in the day of Atleti being the underdog. I can't see how it wouldn't work out. I mean, even if he doesn't quite replicate, even if Atleti don't win the league again, I don't necessarily think that's the expectation, but I think he definitely adds something that they really need.
Fair enough, all positive on that front. What about the mass exodus that is set to happen at Barcelona in the end of this transfer window? Andre Gomez looking like he's going to be on his way. Thomas Vermaelen expected to leave as well. Munir Hadid, Manuel Santos, Douglas all being named as well. Napoli very interested in Denis Suarez too. I mean, suddenly the small amount of depth that was there at Barcelona could be getting thinner and thinner and thinner without too many people coming back in. Of course, signed Dembele this week from Dortmund for a hefty price tag. They're spending some money finally, some of that Neymar money, but they need to replace Neymar still, which they're hoping Dembele will be able to do. But if they lose more of that depth and quality, that's more problems, it seems, at the Camp Nou than they really need already at this part of the season.
Yeah, Barcelona definitely need to ship out some players. And, you know, the Neymar for Dembele one, I guess that's a straight swap. But even if Neymar hadn't left, even if Dembele hadn't come in, this was a problem Barcelona had to tackle this summer, is they just have too many players there that aren't going to be in the first team. And I think they're finding it quite hard to find buyers for them. It's just it's a very big squad. There was a point in the summer where they had 12 midfielders. It's just, it's like the largest squad of in terms of personnel, in terms of numbers, since, you know, what was that Van Blazen squad, the one where there was a crowd of about 20 of them all sort of milling about, each had like about one lyric to sing. That's basically Barcelona this summer. They've just got so many players. You look down the list and you're getting to the point where you've got Thomas Vermaelen and just players like that who are going to maybe rack up, you know, 3 or 4 appearances, if that, this season. And they're just finding it really difficult to find buyers for them. You know, they're going to end up letting some of these players go for a price that just isn't going to be good value at all, or let them go on loan deals. They've been able to get some of them out the door, Jeremy Mathieu, who maybe will come back and haunt them in the Champions League, we'll see. But even he went, and they've definitely not recouped that investment as they would have liked, and they were looking to sell Turan to China. Nobody in China was willing to pay the 30-odd million they were looking for. So, and you look at the way Real Madrid have done business over the last few years, selling a lot of their squad players to build up a massive surplus and then spend that on one or two really big names. Barcelona just haven't been able to do that, which is strange, because in years gone by they were able to sell a lot of players that they didn't need on the bench and make quite a profit. But this summer they found that very difficult.
Simon, what about yourself? Do you think this is a much needed exodus of the chaff to separate them from the wheat, if you will? Or do you think there are some players still that might actually be able to help Barcelona out going down and through the season, particularly when they get stretched, perhaps if they're across all three major competitions that will want to be competing in this year? You know, the likes of Arda Turan, the likes of Andre Gomez and Denis Suarez, the three in particular that I think that, considering they're all be expecting departures, that Barca, yeah, they haven't fitted in yet. They haven't produced their best at times. But, I mean, Arda Turan has come up with some big goals on occasions at the back end of, not last season, but the season before that. Denis Suarez was somebody that always seemed like they were going to give a bit of time and patience with to mould into that midfield and adapt to the Barcelona style after having some time away out on loan.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I think in terms of the players that are being linked with moves away, I think, Marlon will go on loan to Nice, which makes you think, you know, is that a potential sweetener for a deal for Seri? Obviously, with Seri being quite vocal in the fact that he would like to go to Barcelona and he thought that deal would materialise, I think he'd be, you know, another useful midfield option. But obviously, as Ewan said, that's not exactly the area that they're short. I think the problem is that they're needing to replace a couple of roles in their first team squad. So you've got the likes of when Iniesta can't play twice, three times a week, you need someone to come in and replace him. And seeing as they haven't been able to, you know, splash the cash on Felipe Coutinho, they need to look elsewhere for that. I think Douglas, he went out on loan to Sporting Gijón last season. He did okay for them. So maybe you could see him potentially getting a loan deal, you know, for a team who maybe need a little bit of cover at right back and aren't going to be pulling up any trees in the Liga. Aside from that, I think Arda Turan could probably leave without too much fuss. For me, I think Denis Suarez could be useful in terms of having him as a backup left winger for Dembele. So then if you think of it more as you have Ousmane Dembele as your first choice with Denis behind him. On the right-hand side, when Suarez comes back fit, then maybe you'll have Messi out on the right. You've got Deulofeu to replace him. I think that's reasonable depth, and I think that's maybe the depth that Barcelona were looking at having before, you know, the shock sale of Neymar. But yeah, I mean, Andre Gomez, I think there's still more to come from him. For me, I think Douglas Costa, he can easily go. I think Thomas Vermaelen, he can easily go, and I don't think that the club will really want him as their fourth choice centre-half. So, I don't know, maybe they'll look and see that if they can get rid of Vermaelen, get him off their books, maybe a young centre-half could come in as the fourth choice. But yeah, I mean, I think you need someone for the Iniesta role, and aside from that, you'd think that there is reasonable depth in every position. It's just a case of getting rid of those couple who just won't really contribute whatsoever.
What about the, you mentioned it there, Simon, I'd love to hear both of your thoughts on this, the failed attempt to bring in Coutinho, as it seems like he is going to be staying at Liverpool. He's had this back injury, but I'm loving the footage of him warming up, ready for international duty and moving around really freely and well on the training pitch for Brazil. The inability to bring in Coutinho, though, nobody ever says no to Barca and Real Madrid. A deal always gets done. Liverpool are holding out and have held out so far. Unless something miraculous happens over the next few days, it looks like Coutinho will still be at Liverpool come the end of this transfer window. How is that being viewed by Barca themselves? Is it almost an insult? Is it surprising? Are you surprised as well that this hasn't been able to go through, considering it seems like they tried and tried on around three or four attempts now to bring him in, and have then had to bring in Dembele instead?
Yeah, I think from Barcelona's point of view, they're just a little bit stunned by it all. Because as you say, they've gone so many years, they've just, whatever player they wanted to buy, if they come up with the funds, and they've been able to do so. And to be told that no, it's just a little bit shocking. It's like these videos you see when you're at school, and it's, if you just say no to the bully, he'll be so shocked that he'll recoil in fear and leave you alone. And that's almost what's happened, because Barcelona, they don't really seem to have a plan B. They haven't really considered the possibility of Liverpool saying that he's not for sale, and the fact they keep coming back with, you know, increased bids, they sort of don't really seem to be getting the message, and they could end up going down this dead end for so long that they don't have time to target anyone else before the window shuts. So it's a little bit strange to see Barcelona so almost unprepared for the possibility that someone might turn them down, just as they seemed a little bit unprepared for somebody coming in for Neymar, which I think are maybe the two highlights of their, or lowlights of their transfer window, is, you know, losing Neymar and then not being able to get their number one transfer targets.
As I say, they're becoming a selling club, the Catalan giants. Let's talk about then anywhere else around the transfer window that you'd like to go. Where are the important final moves going to be made before deadline? We'll start with you, Ewan.
Well, I think Mbappe's maybe, after Neymar, he's been the number one name of this transfer window, and with him set to move to PSG, that's sort of been in the making for a while. But we've seen so many twists and turns in this saga that it's the kind of one where you won't really believe it until you see it. But if that goes through, then that's going to be a massive deal, and it means we'd have the second, third and fourth most expensive players of all time being all French, with Mbappe, Dembele and Pogba, and then obviously the number one would be playing in France. So it's all the transfer action seems to be in coming from France this summer, which is strange, because for years it's been either in England or in La Liga, and the shift this summer, I think, has been turning towards France, and it doesn't seem to be the kind of thing that's going to stop after this summer. It seems like PSG are going to keep spending for several years once they work out how to bend those FFP rules. So I think Mbappe's transfer is maybe the most exciting one, and one that we've been waiting for the conclusion for the longest.
What about you, Simon? Where else are you expecting to see some moves and shakers in the last few days of the window?
I think Lucas Perez going back to Deportivo is probably quite a big one. I think without Lucas Perez, there's a lot of responsibility on Florian Andone to score the goals that they need to, you know, pull themselves away from the sort of position they were in last season, where they were sort of looking over their shoulder and that they weren't sure whether they would be one of the unfortunate teams to go down. I think if they can get him in, it really helps. Pepe Mel has said in the past that, you know, he's been told by the president that it will happen, but then there's not been news for like a week or two, and there are even reports that Levante were going to come in and offer a few million euros to loan Lucas. So I think Deportivo, they need to get that deal done if they can. I think Emre Mor, he's been linked with a move to Celta Vigo, obviously with Pape Sheikh leaving Celta to go to join Lyon in France. That's given them some funds to play with, and Emre Mor from Dortmund is rumoured to be a player that they would like for, you know, in the region of about, I think it's 30 million euros, and then plus some bonuses, which I think, given the current market and given the fact Emre Mor is a young player, an exciting player, and he seems to have some potential, that seems like a deal which, you know, would make sense for them. And I think it would definitely give give them a few more options up front, because obviously you've got Aspas, who normally plays out on the right and cuts inside. But I think if you've got Emre Moore, who's more of a right winger, maybe it would give a bit of license for Unzué to use, you know, Maxi Gomez and Iago Aspas a bit more through the middle. So yeah, for me, like, those two deals, I think if those deals were to happen, I think it could definitely be, well, a massive positive for Deportivo. And I think it would give Celta, you know, another young, interesting player for us to have a look at over the course of the season.
Yeah, looking to spend around about €25 million for Emre Moore from Borussia Dortmund, Celta Vigo, which would smash the club's transfer record fee. It would be very interesting to see if they are willing to spend that sort of money as we move into the international break and the end of the transfer window. Gentlemen, we haven't actually touched on any football from the weekend, so let's briefly mention that. And plenty of abuse coming Karim Benzema's way after we sidestepped almost Real Madrid's game the previous week. Their game against Valencia on Sunday proving exciting to say the least. Marco Asensio, another man who's rumoured to be leaving Arsenal, preparing to meet the buyout clause on Asensio's contract and bring him to the Emirates, to the Premier League, before the window's out. Scoring the two goals, one at the beginning, one at the end. In between that, Valencia grabbing a couple themselves and putting Real Madrid in a slightly difficult position at some point, and Karim Benzema with a big miss at the end as well to almost give Real Madrid all 3 points on the night. It was a very interesting encounter in the Bernabeu, far less routine than we saw from Madrid on the opening weekend of the season. And more importantly, it's unleashed the vipers once again in terms of those who just cannot see Benzema leading the line for Real Madrid much longer. And to think that just during the Champions League semi-final last year, we were saying how good Benzema looked and how he was able to play off a front man, almost going out wide and using his talents to create as well as score. And now suddenly he's the villain again at the Bernabeu. It's such a chalk and cheese kind of way to treat Karim Benzema. Everybody is on complete opposites of the spectrum about either he's fantastic or he's the worst thing on the planet.
Yeah, and Zidane's on one side of that, and after the match he was asked how he would welcome Benzema back into the dressing room, and he said with a smile, he said, you know, the most important thing is to be creating chances, and he praised Benzema for the creative work he did and said you can't blame a player for missing chances. And I suppose that's maybe true in one match if it goes on a little bit longer, if chances are missed for several weeks in a row, then maybe you can start blaming the player. But yeah, I think Zidane knows that Benzema just had an off night. That does happen. Some will say it happens to Benzema more often than it should, but he played well in the first week against Deportivo. The first goal of the season will go down as Gareth Bale's goal, but it was really Benzema the one that managed to get that ball away and not, you know, nudge it towards Bale for the simple finish. So he proved his worth last week. He didn't. He wasn't able to this time around, but Zidane's definitely going to back him. And I think it was maybe interesting that the biggest boo of the night went Gareth Bale's way and not Benzema's way.
The other thing I thought was quite surprising about Real Madrid this weekend was the Casemiro back in that centre-back position again, a place where he's been criticised a fair bit. In this makeshift back four suddenly for Real Madrid, and how much that played into a part in Valencia's ability to get themselves out of a hole in this game and get away from the Bernabeu with a point. I mean, they always test the big sides, Valencia, however much of a crisis they seem to constantly be in. But taking on a Real Madrid side that's playing Nacho and Casemiro as its back two certainly would have benefited them before the start of the game.
I think that Casemiro, I think there's definitely, you could say maybe for Carlos Soler's goal that maybe he was caught the wrong side of the ball a little bit, but I think aside from that, Casemiro, he provided quite a big presence. There's a couple of very good last-ditch tackles. He wasn't rash in the box. He made some very good interventions. He read the game quite well as well, I think. There was one good interception just on the edge of his box as he looked to cut out across the back post that would have, you know, definitely pulled Keylor Navas out of position and really given him a question to answer. So I think Casemiro, you can kind of forgive a player that's playing a little bit out of position for maybe losing his man once and unfortunately resulted in that goal with Soler tucking home like a really intelligent cutback from Tony Lato. But I think on the whole, I thought he outperformed my expectations, I think. And even though he did pick up his customary yellow card, he then didn't do anything particularly rash to then put his team in the lurch by getting sent off. I think Nacho, he's an important part of the squad, I think, as well, this season and last. He's got quite a bit of pace, so he can cover in behind whoever he's working with. And I think it just gives a little bit more license for, you know, maybe if the likes of someone like Casemiro or someone like Sergio Ramos maybe does something a little bit rash or maybe gets caught a little bit for pace or caught a little high up, Nacho's a good man to come round behind and, you know, mop up for his teammates. So I think even though I think Simone Zaza would have been a bit disappointed that maybe he didn't exploit the fact that, you know, that's a new partnership for Real Madrid and maybe he could have looked to ruffle their feathers a little bit more. I think that both Nacho and Casemiro, they did quite well. I think Zaza's, you know, a physical presence. They dealt with him quite well. And all in all, I thought, considering the fact that they were sort of thrown together through necessity, I thought they did quite well.
You can look at somebody else who made a big physical presence in that game. Certainly made their start to La Liga in their career. Well-known, Condogbia in the heart of the midfield for Valencia with arguably, if it wasn't for Asensio's brace, you'd have been looking at Condogbia being man of the match, not only with a goal, but a really solid structured performance in the heart of the midfield. And is getting some rave reviews as well from the Spanish footballing press after that. We touched on his potential move last time out. Now he's joined and seems to be settling straight in into this Valencia side.
Yeah, I think he's exactly what they needed to sort of complement Dani Parejo a little bit. For some reason, whenever Dani Parejo seems to go to the Bernabeu, he seems to step it up a notch. And it was actually, it was a strange sight to see him, you know, herring about and actually going to ground with a few sliding tackles. But I do think that Condogbia, he offered something, he offered a bit of protection, I think, which is quite important. I saw some people point the fingers of blame to him for the first goal for Asensio, but I think it was just an overhit pass from Rodrigo that sort of caught him off guard. But all in all, I mean, the finish for his goal was fantastic, but it was more about what he did off the ball. So he read the game quite well. He made a few very good blocks in and around his box. And I think he's just a nice complementary presence to Parejo. Last week, Marcelino was kind of forced into playing Alvaro Medrán. And from watching that performance, you kind of felt that, you know, Medrán wasn't his long-term option. And the fact that Condogbia obviously joined from Inter and went straight into the team for the Bernabeu shows like the faith that Marcelino has in him. And he absolutely paid it back. I think he looked brilliant. Not only the fact that he got forward and scored that important goal, but I think it was more what he offered in terms of the ballast that he adds and the fact that you can give the player, give players such as Carlos Soler or Dani Parejo a bit more license to push on and affect the game in the final third, knowing that you've got someone like Condogbia, who, while he is technically a good player as well, he can offer that, you know, that bit of solidity too.
You just get the feeling that Valencia have started to add in all the right places and address problems that have been there last season with the transfers that they've made, and Zaza coming in as well and putting in a decent shift once more for his new side. Another side that interests me in particular with their decisions in the heart of the pitch on the weekend was Sevilla against Getafe. Only the 1-0 victory wasn't perhaps as dominating as some would have expected this Sevilla side to be. And after a fantastic opening weekend for Navas in particular, I thought was superb against Espanyol, wasn't quite the same with that front three. Ben Yedder coming into the heart of the attack, and Pizarro as well, ahead of Nzonzi in the middle of the park. It was quite interesting as that anchor that Sevilla loved to play with, and did an excellent job as well, which, considering that Nzonzi is was expected to be departing, and of course, but seeing as they needed somebody to come in to replace Nzonzi, whether with his future up in the air all summer, Pizarro in his first game and a half has come in and looked the complete character in that holding midfield position.
Yeah, Sevilla are definitely an interesting team, man, because I think their season was really based on whether or not they qualified for the Champions League, and they've managed to get over that most important hurdle, that early hurdle. But they didn't really do it very convincingly. You know, they were one free kick off the post away from playing Europa League football. And that probably means winning the Europa League, but they're a team that hasn't really convinced in the first couple of weeks, and it was the same against Getafe this weekend. And like you say, it's interesting to see, you know, Nzonzi was one of the players that was linked with a move away this summer, but then so too was Ganzo, the one who came up with that magical goal at the end to spare their blushes against Getafe. So I think, you know, obviously with a new coach as well, with Eduardo Berizzo, this is like really a transition couple of months it's going to be, I think, for Sevilla before they really get going. And they don't really seem to know what their best lineup is, what their best centre back pairing is, what their who should be playing on the wings. You know, they've got Jesus Navas and Lito have come in, but that doesn't mean they're automatically going to be starting. I think they still don't know who's going to be playing up front, if that's going to be Ben Yedder or Muriel. So Sevilla, they've got all the right components. They've got a very talented coach, and they've now got Champions League football. But I think it's going to take them a little bit of time to sort of, wedge it all together and work out what it is they're actually doing.
Haven't they perhaps got to think about moving away from the style and formation that they're playing? If you're talking about getting your best players into a best 11, Ben Yedder is one of the best players in that Sevilla side. May not have shown it on the weekend, but absolutely quality little player going forward. Muriel is the big new signing, and from what we've seen, it does look like he will create opportunities to score goals, even if the finishing touch hasn't quite been there just yet. Don't you have to perhaps put these two in together and work around a system that can fit in Navas and Alito, a holding midfielder as protection, Ben Yedder and Muriel?
For me, I think Barrizo will stick kind of with the same blueprint that he enjoyed success with at Celta. I think that with having Ben Yedder there and also having Muriel, I think what it gives them is the option to rotate, but rotate with strength. I mean, they've got the Champions League football confirmed, and that will bring its own challenges with how it congests the fixture list. So for me, I think it'd probably be better to settle into a system that, one, Barrizo is comfortable with it, and he believes in it, and he can get the players to believe in it too. But to have, when you're maybe struggling in the game, if say Ben Yedder isn't having his best game, you've got someone of the quality of Muriel to come off the bench, or maybe when it comes down to the group stages, when they're playing on a Tuesday or Wednesday, it's no weakness to start perhaps with, say, Ben Yedder in the Champions League midweek, and then start with Muriel on the weekend. I think it gives some good options for rotation, and it will really give Ben Yedder and Muriel the confidence that if they're scoring goals and they're playing well, then there's every chance that they could be the one that rotates into being first choice for Barrizo in the big games. I think they've got too much talent in terms of going forward out wide to really leave out that being, you know, a big facet of their play, having wingers that aren't afraid to come inside and cause some problems. The only thing for me is that I think they do need to maybe look at bringing in another left back. I know that they've had a couple of targets for a while, and they should be hopefully bringing in a left back for the end of the transfer window. But I think pretty much that in the formation that they're currently using, I can't see it changing. I think Barrizo knows what he wants, and he knows what's worked for him in the past. And I think that he will be quite confident that having, you know, players like Crandelli, having players like Nolito who know what he wants as well, I think he'll be confident that he can, you know, eventually, it might take a little bit of time, but he can make it work with what they've got.
Right, gents, we are running out of time on the podcast today, so let's quickly run around some of the other games from the weekend. Atletico Madrid with a 5-1 victory away at Las Palmas. Just briefly, gentlemen, was this a result that Simeone needed after the early shake on the opening day of the season? This will have settled some of the Atletico Madrid nerves, surely.
Not just the result, I think, but the performance as well, and also the fact that he played quite a lot of his squad players in this game, and they really turned up for him. They had the youngest average age of the weekend by some bit. It was 23 years old. I think only Valencia with 24 average age was anywhere close. So this was a game to give some youth a chance. Thomas Partey played very well. Obviously, they didn't have Griezmann, who's suspended. So this, and Felipe Luis still wasn't back from injury. So this was a chance for some of the squad players to show what they can do, and to show that, you know, who cares about a transfer ban, and they definitely did that. They produced a great performance, and yeah, you can't come away from a 5-1 victory with any frowns at all. That was exactly what Atletico needed.
And Barcelona fans able to see Paulinho for the first time in a Barca shirt, and excuse me, it's not even the first time, is it? It's the second time. Apologies. But a 2-0 victory against Alaves on the weekend as well. Another simple one. The only surprise, really, that Lionel Messi misses a penalty.
Yeah, I mean, Barcelona, it was another adequate performance. Nothing too special. But when Alaves made a couple of, you know, quite costly mistakes, Messi put them to the sword with two goals. So really, I mean, I'm sure that Valverde will just be happy to, you know, keep the ball rolling. They definitely weren't grabbing any headlines with the manner in which they won that game. Alaves weren't really interested in playing too much expansive football. It was more pack plenty of players in midfield and make it difficult for Barcelona. But, you know, they managed to get over the hurdle. Messi's got a couple of goals after obviously being frustrated by the woodwork last week, which denied him. So, I mean, it's just another bit of a confidence boost, I think, more than anything for Barcelona to get another 3 points on the board.
Weird to think that Barcelona need confidence boosts, particularly for two games into the season. But, I completely agree with what you're saying there. Finally, a big shout-out of the weekend surely goes to Girona for their first season in La Liga in the club's history. They started with the draw against Atletico Madrid on the opening day of the season, and now 1-0 win against Malaga. Should the middle to upper sides in La Liga be fearing the Spanish top flight new boys?
I think they could maybe fear them in terms of the fact they'll need to go away to Montilivi. Obviously, they've profited from the calendar spitting out the fact that they've got those two home games at the start of the campaign. So I think that teams will be maybe... They'll be wary of going there. I think that they're definitely going to remain underdogs, and I think maybe away from home we might see them having to play maybe in a slightly different way, and we'll find out against Athletic in the first game week in September exactly how they're going to conduct themselves away from home. But I think from what we've seen so far, they've definitely got the tools to be a frustration, and I think even though when they're playing against some of the big teams, when you've got the likes of Real Madrid, Barcelona, these kind of teams could maybe exploit the kind of more minuscule gaps that they might leave in their system. But for now, I mean, Girona have got to be confident that they can make Montilivi into a bit of a fortress and really ensure that anyone who's finishing in the bottom half come the end of the season, that they're taking as many points away from them as possible.
The international break is looming on the horizon. Spain at home against Italy in the Bernabeu on Saturday, with Sergio Ramos asking that the Madrid fans do not boo any Barca players in the Spanish side in the World Cup qualifier. And then away against Liechtenstein on Tuesday. I know you both will be following the international break very observantly. What are we expecting from the Spanish against the Italians? It's not the easiest draw when you're paired with one of the few other big sides in international European football when you're in these qualifiers. But this is a big game for the Spanish in the Bernabeu.
Yeah, they can't afford to slip up in this one with following on from the draw in Italy. So it would certainly be interesting if this one does finish as another draw. And then it's in terms of who finishes top, it will be left to a goal difference shootout. So that could be quite good fun down the stretch. But if Spain win this game, then that's surely their place as group winners secured. And in front of the Bernabeu for the first time in several years now that Real Madrid and the Federation had sort of ironed out their differences, although that might change soon again. But it'd be nice to see Spain playing at the Bernabeu, because it has been a while.
Simon, does Ramos need to be asking people not to boo the Barca players at the Bernabeu this weekend? Is that really an essential comment to be making, or is there some weight behind that? You're not going to see people surely turning on club over country, especially not the fans.
I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting one. Obviously, given the track record behind it, that obviously shows that Ramos feels that it's something that needs to be said. But it's difficult. I mean, you'll always have people, regardless of, even though Ramos being club captain, being a bit of, Mr. Real Madrid kind of figure, that there'll always be some people who will, with the tensions between the clubs and everything that goes along with it. I think just putting out a statement and asking for it might be a little bit of wishful thinking on his part, because I think if people are geared in that way, then I don't think what he says necessarily will sway them all too much.
Interesting to see what takes place then between Spain and Italy, followed by Liechtenstein against Spain, as I say, coming up on Tuesday night next week. And then it's back to the La Liga action once again. Gentlemen, we will be back next week to talk about the international break. I will be doing my best to try and find a stream of Liechtenstein against Spain. I don't think I'll be able to find anybody broadcasting it where I am. But we will discuss all things Spain, Italy and Liechtenstein, Spain, as I say, next weekend. Mr. Ewan McTare at eMcTare on Twitter. Really appreciate the time as always, mate. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Pleasure to make my season debut.
And we will get onto Ibar at some point, I'm sure, this season.
Just not the weekend after our defeat.
Exactly. Yeah, we'll make sure it's when they come back with a nice 3-0 victory against Girona or someone like that, shall we? What about you, Simon? Appreciate you taking the time out on the show as always. At Simon H Football, at Simon H Football, also known as Simon the Brand Harrison. Always a pleasure, never a chore, my friend.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, we're gonna have a bit of time off at the weekend potentially in terms of only having that one Spain game to focus on, and then we'll get right back into everything again. So, pleasure as always. Thanks for having me on.
Always a pleasure, mate. Thanks a lot. We'll be back, as I say, next week, probably Wednesday, to look back at Tuesday's action. Until then, enjoy the football. Get on to at Marker in English. That's at Marker in English on Twitter, on Facebook. Just type in Marker in English into the search bar and you'll be able to follow and find the page from there. Like it on Facebook. Get on to iTunes. Type in I on La Liga. Write a review. Leave a recommendation for the podcast. Send a link out to your friends. Do whatever you want with it. Just give us some positive or negative feedback back. And remember to ask any questions via social media, either Facebook or Twitter, and we will try and get back to you either on the show or independently. Until next week, got a break from La Liga, but it's set up to be a fine season. Enjoy the end of the transfer window and all the football coming internationally this weekend. Until next time, have a good one.